Or can we take the time, slow down, maybe not track the new fancy thing and make sure that the tracking that we already have in place is done in a sustainable way, is consistent with itself.
Welcome to 33 Tangents, a weekly podcast featuring a rotating panel of co-hosts that all work together in the same company, but live in different areas of the world. The discussions cover a wide variety of topics from digital analytics to working remotely to current happenings in business and technology. Our regular day-to-day conversations often go off in various directions, and the goal of this podcast is to share our ideas and find new ways to engage with others. All right, we're back again, and Jason, we have Jen for a third week in a row. This is awesome.
Coming off of, Jen's making the rounds. I just watched Jen on a
people
panel
are gonna
discussion.
Be tired of hearing from me.
No, I hardly doubt that. So.
I debated whether or not I should change my shirt from the webinar from that the I did earlier today, just to make it look like they weren't more back to back. But I don't think anyone's gonna pay attention.
I've
given my secret. The webinar I recorded with Frederick Werner and Jim Gordon, it was with Acutix, but I just did a few hours ago
and it was good.
Very cool.
It was good. It was enjoyable, kind of similar to the podcast, Phil, just kind of hanging out back, talking about a topic. So did I tell you about did you see on Slack the compliment that I received about the podcast?
I did see that. Yes,
it's a good one.
Remind me.
Yeah. So someone said, "Hey, I just got done listening to one of your episodes." I'm like, "Oh, cool. Which one is like?" He's like, "To be honest with you, I wasn't really paying attention."
Oh yeah.
But I was like,
it's a good smooth voice. Yeah,
your voice is soothing. So I'm like, okay, thanks.
I appreciate and respect all reasons to listen to this.
Yes. So cool. And I wonder if Jen has any similar experiences. I'm thinking I need to hit the gym to do some like forearm. Like, what do you do? Like curls or something? Like, how do you strengthen your forearms?
Go rock climbing.
Is that push-ups?
Yeah, find a bouldering gym or something.
I'm scared of
right
rock climbing.
Here is.
I'm learning the Interstellar main theme on the piano. And it is so intense that my arms just like, I'm like, my arms are not strong enough to play this song. Every other song, I'm fine playing.
From back when I played the harp, you kind of have to hold your arms up like this the whole time. And that gets, you'd be surprised how often
tiring.
That gets tiring.
Are you back on the bouldering?
Yeah, we go three times a week.
Okay.
And you can't tell, but these are buff forearms now, so. Yeah.
Now
got nothing on my husband.
But. Now people that do like, especially people that do through hikes, now they get a trail name. Do you get like a bouldering name? Or
well, at the we only really do indoor climbing at a local gym. But yes, if you are the first one to ascend a route, you get to name it. So my 13-year-old actually got to name a 5'9".
Oh, really?
So
that's cool.
Very proud of yourself.
That's a rating system, Jim. You have to watch documentaries to get that. It's all complicated.
It is complicated. And it's all arbitrary. Like, it varies by gym and region and stuff anyway. So, but I do highly recommend. I mean, if you're afraid of falling and hurting yourself, then don't boulder and rock climb where you have a rope instead. And you can't hurt yourself as easily.
Yeah.
It's the only form of physical activity that has held my interest for more than a month.
And three times a week is no joke.
Yeah, we go a lot.
That's serious.
Core even.
It's a lot of fun though.
And bouldering a lot like tag management methodologies.
There we go. There's the segue.
That was it. I was just waiting for my chance to segue. Because the way you were talking with bouldering, like, hey, you can go out in nature and do it. You can go to a gym. There's different ways you could do it. Same with tag management methodologies. So the conversation we had today, it needed to be its own episode. It was as Jen and I were wrapping up last week. And like we've started a series of episodes on looking back at getting back to the basics.
like focusing attention or refocusing attention on like key concepts and practices that can often get overlooked as analytics and testing programs age. So the core things you used to do, like, yeah, maybe you've become a little lax in, and because attention has been drawn elsewhere. And so Jen and I last week were talking about like over-engineering data collection and several, you know, aspects of that and the draw to it and how do you keep that under control. And then Jen mentioned as we were wrapping up the, you know, we can even talk about tag management solutions, even outside of like analytics and individual marketing technologies, look at these individually. And Jen, you made this curious comment about like you had just wrapped up work on optimizing a TMS setup, and like shortly after you handed it off, it started to fall apart. So I was curious about getting more details on that, and then talking about how like the core practices and how best to build out a TMS implementation, something that will stand up.
It's funny because this is now the third conversation I've had where today, where there's been kind of a debate about how much to go into custom code versus keep it in the interface and all of that. The example that I alluded to, and Jim, if you haven't figured it out yet, you will very soon what project I'm talking about. This client has a lot of third-party marketing tags that they are an international brand, and each country seems to have a different agency. So they have a gazillion G tags, particularly between AdWords and DoubleClick. And they did a replatforming where we got to start fresh on everything. And I'm like, okay, this time we're going to make it so that it's easier to maintain all of these G tag things. And we're still all working in the code. It would be a ridiculous amount of interface to deal with to try to use the GTAG extension or something. So I have this elaborate like utility functions to help make it so that you don't have to set the whole GTAG, that you only put this one bit of string in and it'll magically put it all together, and you would just maintain this list of 120 different cases where we're firing tags or whatever. And I didn't document it particularly well. And the client is taking over a lot of the marketing tag stuff. And the first chance they had to go in there and add G tag, they did it kind of the old fashioned way that everyone always would. I'm like, but my beautiful system, no. I was so proud of it. And I think in some cases, something like that is, you know, you're taking something very complicated and trying to simplify it. And sometimes it's just always going to be complicated no matter what you do. But also sometimes the things that we program or the frameworks that we set up seem very apparent and easy and simple to us. And then the poor person who has to maintain it doesn't really make sense. So anytime that somebody comes into your tag management library, and if they have to have a eureka moment, or at any point they're going, oh wow, like maybe you've overcomplicated things a little bit, that people shouldn't need a light bulb moment to understand how it all works together.
It's a really important point, and as you were talking through that, I don't think it's a direct analogy, but you remember the Simpsons episode when Homer and his brother designed a car together, and it had like
classic.
Yeah.
We've seen so many tag management architectures that kind of resemble that, where, and it's because, you know, to your point, you've probably had over the years three or four or more people that have come in and kind of put their own personal kind of brand on it. And so you have all these different things kind of cobbled together. I guess, is that just the reality and there's no way around it? Or, and short of like rebuilding everything, how do you adhere to some sort of, at least, I guess, style? So you know, you could make changes, but we're going to keep it in the same kind of style.
I think to a degree, there are intended ways for this stuff to be done. Like launch, that's what we're talking about, still won't call it Adobe Tags. Launch has an interface that'll allow you to get most things done that you need to. And it's only once we're like, oh, this is too complicated in the interface, I'm going to take it to code that is then probably going to become too complicated in code. So in some cases, I think it's just a matter of seeing what can be done with what is already existing. And instead of reinventing the wheel, it might be that the way that it was set up in launch completely in the interface is still wildly inefficient, and you have to go through and figure out what's a way that we can simplify and uncomplicate this. So I think we do that with interface only no code architecture just as much as we do with code architecture. But code, I think, has more tendency to have personal flavor and get complicated as it changes hands and stuff.
How much of that, if any, is the direct result of implementers not being given the proper time? Even if they may ask for the proper time to do an implementation, there's pushback to say, no, we need this now. So they don't have the time to really think about how any kind of changes or additions fit into the existing architecture.
Yeah, I wasn't even thinking about all of the, like, if you have to put workarounds in place, because that's frequently why folks go to custom code. It's because you asked your developers to give you a certain value and they're giving it slightly wrong. So you have to convert, you know, use JavaScript to convert date formats or something like that. Whereas ideally, you would never have to do that. You go back to the developers and say, this is the format we need it in. And you would just have a nice flow all the way from the data layer into reporting. So yes, to a degree, a lot of the time that complexity comes about because we can't go back to the developers and ask them to change the data layer of the site in whatever way we need. But sometimes, even if you have a perfect data layer, there's just people who overcomplicate, have frameworks, basically mini tag management systems within their tag management system that multiple times now over the years, I've had clients where they just use their TMS as a code deployment system. And everything else was managed just purely in their own code. If you're using a Git repo for your analytics implementation, then you might, I don't want to say doing it wrong, that seems so harsh, but you might be adding extra complexity and making it harder on whoever's going to come after you, rather than using, you know, built-in functionality that's well documented, that there are best practices out there for.
So speaking of methodologies, and you've seen who knows how many different implementations at this point in your career, are companies selecting like a specific methodology, whether it's something someone has proposed in industry or something that they've put deliberate thought around to say, this is how we're going to make deliberate use of our tag manager, or is it more of just organically, like we're doing stuff, or this is how we do development in general, and we're going to try to shoehorn it into our tag management methodology?
I think usually it is more organic. Like the messier situations come about more organically because we're iterating, and it's so rare that you have an opportunity to just wipe it all clean and start fresh with a new long-term architecture in mind, you know. But I did get to do that recently, where we burned it all to the ground and had a new data layer, fresh new launch properties. And it's, frankly, it's depressing that, like, I'm always saying, oh, if I just had the opportunity to start fresh. And then very quickly, the real world happens and you realize that, oh, yeah, we're just changing where the complexity is going to be now, or how quickly, oh, there are problems in the data layer and I can just put a quick fix in the TMS rather than go back to the devs who are never going to give me the time of day again after re-implementing everything for me.
No, I'm going to cough. In your mind, are there, whether it's formally defined or not, are there distinct kind of segments of different methodologies you've seen taken towards tag management, whether it's kind of it's the Wild West or it's very stringent and locked down or it's very, you know, no code oriented? Mm-hmm. Are there any commonalities that you've seen?
Well, there is the kind of TMS within a TMS framework that I was talking about, where they're just have one big massive block of custom code that they have their own kind of framework within it. Aside from that, I feel like frequently the architecture that I see work the best, I actually just blogged about this. I haven't copied it over to the 33.6 blog, but on digitaldatatactics.com, where everything is, first of all, you have a naming convention from the start, because especially in launch and with data elements, you don't want to be renaming data elements because launch doesn't automatically update any names anywhere, and you have to go through and find everywhere you've referenced that data element. So a bare minimum, having a clean start is nice because you can start with naming conventions from the start. But when Satellite, which became DTM, which became Launch, which became Tags, was fairly new back in like 2013, 2014, Evan Lapointe, who's one of the great minds behind it, had slides that showed how other TMSs were from the bottom up, and we are designed to be from the top down, of thinking first of your requirements and going backwards from there, kind of. And I still kind of think of it that way, of this is the chunk of logic, this is the scope where this chunk of logic needs to fire, and keeping it as unredundant as possible of, you know, this is just the little bit of stuff that needs to fire on internal search, and that's going to have its own location and rule. And then here's the stuff that needs to fire everywhere. And there are ways of combining that that reduces how often you have to repeat variables or repeat code or rely on code. Though I will say, even that solution you can get carried away with, and sometimes it is just simpler to have five lines of if then JavaScript conditions, you know.
So to that point around kind of the thought process of how tags, and then going through the lineage of renaming and improvements that platform was over the years, is there a specific methodology that kind of begs to work in that environment, maybe other tag managers? And I guess when I say other tag managers, at least with the cohort of brands that we work with, it's often not more than tags by Adobe, Google Tag Manager, and ever so randomly now Tealium. Are methodologies really abstract? Should we be thinking like an abstract from the tag manager, or should we really be thinking, you know, based on how the tag manager thinks about the logic of how data is collected, we should align the methodology
to
that?
That's a good question. I can't speak too much to Tealium. I can say what I've seen done data layer wise, but I've never been in a place where I could really see what architecture works best within the tool. GTM is very interesting because it has this many to many relationship of a trigger can be used in many places, a variable can be used in many places, and a tag can have multiple triggers and all of that. Whereas Launch is much more there is no way to copy triggers between rules. And from my point of view, you shouldn't be. There should just be one rule that matches that particular trigger. These days, maybe two rules, because you have to break it up because of consent management. So you have, you know, your page view for analytics and your page view for marketing tags. But now that's not to say I would not love to have reusable triggers in Launch, kind of like GTM has. But that's just not really the way that it was designed, that it's you think first of what is the situation in which you want this logic to fire, and then you put all the logic that belongs to that situation together. I don't know if that makes sense.
It does. So thinking towards the future, I guess I'm making an assumption. As things are, at least the writing on the wall is moving at some point more towards server side, does that fundamentally change, I guess, the tag management layer in general and the methodology we take specifically?
Yes and no. First of all, whenever we in our industry are talking about server side, we're almost always talking about client to server side, not server to server, but still starting with JavaScript and cookies. So to a degree, there's always going to be some data collection that's happening just in the JavaScript, and therefore you have these same client-side JavaScripty options. That said, you know, I've already seen where a client's sending in the wrong date, and I could fix it in JavaScript, or I could fix it. You know, this is a going through AEP and CJA. I can go into their data prep for their data stream, and once I figure out the functions and format over there, because it's not JavaScript, I could reformat the date string over there now, and it's not going to weigh down the JavaScript, and it's also not going to be very visible when you're looking at the site and the data. You know, it does add some opacity to it. So I think the industry is still figuring out how much it makes sense to do server side versus just JavaScript. And then there may come a day where it truly is more server to server, and we're not using JavaScript at all.
Yeah. But you do bring up an interesting point. As an implementer, where do you think about where that data transformation should live? Because it's a conversation that I've also had with a brand recently where, you know, page taxonomy is captured one way through their tag management system, but then come to find out it didn't make sense to the analyst. So they then, you know, have all these different ways of repurposing and reorganizing the data, whether within the analytics tool or exporting it to an Excel or something else. How do you make the determination of where should that transformation live?
Oh, that is the question, isn't it? I think a lot of the time, instead of even asking that, and now this is naive and doesn't work in the real world all the time, and I get that, but it should be ideally we go back to the start and we change the way that we're capturing things to match the current needs. And we talked about this in last week's episode a little bit, that it's okay to change your implementation after its initial, you know, launch. And yet, in my case where I had the date format in the wrong format, I have not yet gone back to the developers and asked them to change it, because I can change it server side. And then the next person who comes along maybe wants to do it in JavaScript. So part of it to me is I don't care where you do it so much as that you do it in one place and that you reduce the different points of failure along the way. You do it consistently and you allow and you go back to the start where you can and rebuild things. Because it's I keep thinking back to a really messy property that I got into of that had 180 rules or something, and I didn't want to touch and ruin what was currently there and technically working for them. But at the same time, when I needed to create a new rule, I don't know if I do it the backwards way that they had it, where they literally were setting their global variables in every single rule, and every page on the site had its own rule. Mm. It was so painful.
Oh, you got a thumbs up.
Yeah, look at that. But then when I create a new rule, do I want to have this one rule that's my way and then everything else in there is their own way? Because we don't have time to clean up the stuff that's currently there. And I think that's 99% of the time what's going on of we don't have time to clean it up. Do we keep perpetuating just to keep a single consistent, if silly, system? or can we take the time, slow down, maybe not track the new fancy thing and make sure that the tracking that we already have in place is done in a sustainable way. It's consistent with itself.
Ben Gaines was texting me and I had a hard time not thinking about this picture that Jen has where he's like 12 years old or something sitting around a campfire.
Don't get me in trouble with Ben.
does he not know you have that?
No, I think he does and he doesn't like it.
Ben doesn't listen to our podcast.
Okay, we're clear.
No, but you, and I think that this speaks to the importance of kind of putting deliberate thought into the methodology that you define for how a tag management system is to be used. Otherwise, again, it is kind of just a ad hoc-ish wild, wild west of, well, in this instance, we'll do this, in that instance, we'll do something else. And on an extreme, and by the way, I agree with you. I think at the headwaters feels like the best place to make a change, right? Anything downstream from there, it just feels like it's introducing more probability for human error as we're kind of doing the data manipulation to fit a specific use case. And I'll give you a wild extreme example of where this is happening or where it had happened with a brand. And I don't know if it was lack of resources, if it was I don't know what it was, but they had a change in their conversion funnel where their steps, and they had like a 7-step conversion process, and they reordered the steps, and they didn't go into the TMS to update the taxonomy of how the steps were reordered or the data layer or wherever. And these steps were labeled step 1, step 2, step 3, step 4, step 5. Mm-hmm. And I did an analysis. I said, hey, you're having a real fallout problem on step 4. And they're like, you mean step 7? I'm like, what? Like, oh yeah, we re-moved things around and we didn't go into the TMS and update things. So what we did is we just gave a translation table to the business. So now everyone knows when you talk about step 4, you really mean step 7. I'm like, what? Why?
But at the same time, I can totally see how that happens. Like, that does not seem that far-fetched to me, because I've been in so many situations where the area of control that you have is so limited that you can't go back to the beginning, or it's too ambitious, it would take too long or whatever. So you just find a system that works and make it happen in the moment, but we never then go back and fix those up. Yeah, I think that's my biggest thing is, fine, you have to do a workaround in the moment, but then keep it in your roadmap of, we're going to go back and fix this the right way.
But do you ever go back and fix it?
No, it never does. Never until happens. The next replatforming, when you burn it all to the ground and start fresh.
Why do we say that? Why do we say that? I mean, do we really believe we're going to go back and do it? I feel like we have enough history to say that it's just not going to happen. Why do we continue to say, you know, we'll just do this one time and we'll go fix it later?
I think it's speaking of Evan LaPointe, he mm-hmm. said this to me like last year we were talking, and he's like, Evan next week is never nearly as busy as Evan is this week. So there's an optimism. I'll get to it next week. And absolutely. I think it's the same thing. It's this optimism that, hey, in a month I won't be as busy and I'll be able to circle back around and come back and get to it. And that time just never comes.
Yeah. Well, another stuff comes up and it's like, just we know we're never going to get back to it.
Exactly. And that's why you don't ever get back to it. It's this, I want to get back to it, but there's always something new. And when you say, hey, let's put a stopgap of a patch in place here.
And we'll usually the new thing is another stopgap you have to put in place.
Yes. Yeah. Oh. There's nothing more permanent than a temporary MarTech fix.
Yeah. Okay, so we're almost at like the 30-minute mark. This is crazy. But I do have one other question I want to ask Jen. You know, thinking about methodologies, if I had to like pressure you into saying like, you don't have to define a full-blown methodology, but you should absolutely always do this one thing and absolutely always avoid doing this one thing.
You took my question again. I had a similar question. Okay. But go ahead.
Oh, we need buy me some time to think. Yeah, talk about the weather or something for a moment.
Jen, while you're thinking about that.
Well, she has to think.
Yeah. Well, I can divide my attention. Yeah, that's what I do. Sorry, go ahead, Jen.
Well, no, I was going to say, this is actually to Jason. Well, Jen, sorry. While you're thinking. Like, for you, like, in the past, now, as, like, you're talking with prospects, when thinking about a TMS, like what immediately comes to mind, like when considering like what TMS to use, what approach to take, even just from a scoping perspective, what should someone take into consideration?
I have no idea. And I think that that's actually a good topic for discussion, is making sure you have the right people in the room to have those conversations. It's been 2019 since I was really, really actively involved in TMS work, and I've gotten back into both tags and Google Tag Manager recently. I'm like, I don't understand what's happening. It's changed so much. And so I'm really not in a position to have that conversation. And I think that's a great example of making sure that someone like a Jim or a Jen is in the conversation, because I'm not the right person to be able to have that conversation.
And I didn't mean to call you out on that. I was just curious to see what you thought.
Well, now I don't know which of the questions I want to answer.
Go with Jason's, because like, what's like the one thing you should be doing? Can I rephrase it?
Yeah, sure.
What are the two things you should not do? Let's flip it around and think about it that way.
The answer I wanted to give for the what should you do, it just feels like such a cop-out answer, but leave room for change and iteration. If you go into a property and 80% of it is set up in a way that you think could be optimized greatly, but you just don't have the time or permission, then make the time, get the permission, put aside a couple hours a week to just go back and fix one thing that you can fix, that you can streamline, that you can rename, that you can document, but we're just not giving enough attention to existing implementation. So that's my one thing that you should do, is make sure that there is room to go back and make the small changes that you can, because frequently we say we will wait until we can do a big fix everything change, and that never comes. So if you can fix one thing, do it. Things you should not do, just do everything in code and avoid the interface. I think that's a pitfall that it might work short term, but you're setting yourself up for a lot of maintenance and headache.
We're still over time, but I want to ask you a question about that. Did vendor product managers make a misstep in making it too easy to inject custom code? What did they, meaning it was, should have they have kind of had some forethought, or is it really not their responsibility? That really needs to be more on the buyer beware.
I don't think so, because I definitely appreciate the flexibility of having the code. If anything, I would, if I could go to the product managers of these tools, I would love them to see where and how are folks using all of the custom code, and is there a way that we could make that happen in the interface more? Like a whole lot of custom code and repetitive stuff happens in implementations that use launch that have direct call rules, where if you want global variables, all of a sudden you're daisy chaining and this direct call rule has to call on that direct call rule. And there is no way to say, fire this rule on all direct call rules, so we go to do plugins instead and put it in code. Whereas with the Adobe Client Data Layer, there is a fire this on all events. And it simplifies things so much to have that one little feature. So I don't think having the ability to put all the custom code, because there's no way the product managers are going to anticipate everything that we want to do. That's life. So the custom code gives us the ability to make up for gaps, perhaps. But they need to go back and say, we don't have to wait until we completely rebuild this tool. We can fix this one little thing. I think we see that with product management quite a bit, too, where we, rather than make the small little change that we can in the near term, we keep the current setup going. It has momentum and we don't want to think about the greater changes that need to happen, because it can be overwhelming.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah. I do want to add one thing to that and we'll wrap up in a second. Jen, to your point, like I do also remember, coming into work with a client where it was all custom code. There was like five rules. And on the surface, it looks highly optimized. Everything's built into five rules. But when you dig in, it was massive blocks of custom code. So the primary user who did the initial implementation was a developer versus, say, an analytics architect or a marketing technology architect that understands the business side of it, understands that one of the goals of the TMS is to offer those UI features so that someone who isn't a developer but is still technically savvy can use the tool. And I think, Jason, to your point, I think it is a bit of buyer beware or buyer education that this tool is designed for that analytics architect. It's designed for that marketing technology architect who knows enough custom code that they're not going to break the site and they will use it when the UI doesn't completely get them what they need. But it's not another tool for injecting, its primary use is not to be that tool to inject massive amounts of custom code.
But that's a unicorn that you're described. Like so many companies don't have that architect role, or they can bring in consultants who will help them with that. But you're absolutely right that almost always, if I see a implementation that invented its own mini framework or just has way too much custom code, it's because they had a developer who didn't have experience with tag management come in. You can't just bring in an analyst analysts who don't have architecture side of things, because you can't do everything just in the interface. And we learned that with tag management systems early on, that they tried to be so easy, marketers can do it, which is simultaneously not true and insulting.
That's what we used to sell stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's not that easy. You do need somebody who can tie the pieces together and think in terms of this is a product, not tag code deployment. It is a product that we can use and optimize.
We can go on for like 3 hours.
Yeah, kidding.
But you bring up a really important point, and I think it is something that the vendors do have a responsibility for and they haven't taken, and that is this positioning of things, whether it's launching an A/B test, doing an analysis, or implementing marketing technology solutions, that it's easy has really undermined our ability to be successful jointly as a vendor, as an end user, as a business, because they have positioned it as easy. It's not easy. And then to your point, Jen, like so many organizations don't even have an architect because they've been told this is easy, it just works. And then it doesn't, and then they're upset at the vendor. They look bad because they're not driving. Like, I think it should be okay to say this isn't easy. We've invented tools that make it easier, that help us be more efficient in what we do. But I think it should be okay and actually healthy for us to say this isn't easy, and we need to invest in the right people to make this work. Otherwise, it's not going to work.
Absolutely. Okay. Could not agree more.
All right, I'm done.
So we can end on that note then.
Yes, let's end there.
Takeaway message.
Yeah, this is something that we can discuss for hours. And Jen, I think I'd like to bring it back again to continue this. And especially as we start to learn more with what's coming, right? We know that there's major vendor conferences coming up. We know the new announcements are coming. I'm interested to see what we see at Adobe Summit in a month's time. We're still dealing with the fallout around the GA Universal deprecation and whatnot. So this is ever going to be an evolving topic. So let's catch up again when we hear a bit more, especially with the server side stuff.
Awesome.
Cool. Well, thanks again for joining us. And Jason, any parting words?
No. If I start up again, it's going to be another 10 minutes before.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll catch you off now. Then. For me. All right. Well, hey, thank you both. And we'll go ahead and wrap up there and talk to everyone later.
Bye.
All right, see ya.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of 33 Tangents. If you enjoyed what you heard, please rate and review the show on your favorite podcast aggregator so others can find us. If you would like to reach us, you can do so by emailing podcast@33sticks.com or on the web at 33tangents.33sticks.com. 33 Tangents is a production of 33 Sticks, an analytics boutique.